verse 39 of chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita. One who has faith and diligence, and who has control of his senses, attains knowledge. Having attained this knowledge, he soon reaches the state of absolute peace. One who has faith and diligence, and who has control of her senses, attains knowledge. Having attained this knowledge, she soon reaches the state of absolute peace. So in this verse, there are three ingredients, three requisites, to a person who's going to get there, who's going to reach this thing that we talk about, this state of being, and a state of being where we're totally cool with it. Freedom, liberation, peace. Those three ingredients. You have to have faith, be a person of faith, be diligent, and control of the senses. These things lead to knowledge. The knowledge is what creates the spontaneous realization that we're free. We're already there. That is not something about changing who you are or getting the more perfect version of yourself. It's not about that. You couldn't get these ingredients. You either have them and you're on this path, or you don't. And maybe you have some of this, some of these ingredients to different degrees. And so you make it somewhere down this path. But if you have these ingredients in the right amount, then the knowledge will reveal itself to you. It becomes obvious. It becomes obvious you're already free. The knowledge that this is all one thing. One self. You could call it a dream of Brahman, a dream of the self, or a veil that's been covered over it, and so we forget. But the knowledge is that it's one. It's just one. All the appearances of differences are constructs of the mind. And it's not actually that way. We just perceive it that way. And as we perceive it that way, we have an inherent lack of knowledge. The non-dualists, they're a little rough with that inherent lack of knowledge. They'll go as far to say it's called ignorance. It's ignorance to the true knowledge. This belief that there's separateness, different, many. But it's not actually that way. It's just one. And as we practice with our diligence, we slowly start to correct that mistake in all the aspects of our life. So instead of seeing these differences in our relationships, in our friends, our enemies, and our loved ones, instead of seeing the differences with our relationship to our work, our relationship to society, politics, differing cultures, nature, technology. Instead of seeing these differences through diligence, it means all the time, diligently practicing, seeing if this true knowledge can be apparent all the time. Can it be here with you all the time? And again, it's not that it's something you have to go get and then bring with you, because that would not be all the time. What we're seeking what the teachings say, this knowledge, it's already here, it can't go away, and it's always been here. So what is that? What meets that criteria? This is what your diligence must be. You must be diligent in that you do not waver from the core of the idea, the core of what you're seeking, until you know it's false. When it's like, you know what, that's a bunch of baloney. That's not true. And you know it in the heart of your heart, then maybe you can write this off. But if you're just frustrated with it, that's not diligence. And that's not a control over your senses. See, the senses take in the world, and they trigger you. They create responses that are sort of meant to make you feel separate, so to speak. They get you to interact and participate. And they use control of the senses. It means you're going to have senses, you're going to participate, but you're in control. They don't overwhelm you. They don't distract you. They don't take you out of your diligence. That's what they mean by control of the senses. It's not that you sublimate. I think sublimate is the right word. Like, it's not that you quell your senses or you try to hide away. Maybe you have to do that for a little while to practice how to gain control of your center, your ability to be diligent. But that's why you have to bring it into your whole life. So when you step back out, earlier we talked about the different parts of your life, you step back out into those parts. Are your senses operating, but they're under your control, as opposed to them controlling you? Maybe you know somebody like this. Their senses control them. They can't hear this knowledge. You think in your mind. Think of someone who you know. They're just at their whim of their senses. They see something shiny and they want it. They taste something tasty, they want more of it. Now these are very simple versions, but they get complex as we get more complex. These little patterns of idiosyncrasies we build up with people. You see a person completely lose themselves, say things they don't mean, behave poorly in a way that they wish they hadn't. This is what it means to not have control of the senses. So let's say if that's happening to you, it's going to be very hard for you to find that knowledge in that area of your life. You take a nice vacation by yourself, go somewhere beautiful and quiet. Oh, you have control of your senses there. And so you have the knowledge there. It's present for you. You realize, oh, everything's one. It's beautiful. Life's wonderful. There is beauty in this world. It takes all the other's muck that gets covered up and pushes them away. You see what's always there. Then you go back to that area of your life where you struggle. You don't have as good a control. And what happens? All the responses, those senses, they heat you up, they make your skin crawl, they make you fidget, they make you panic, or anxious, or fearful, and they take over. They cover up what you already know, what you knew when you were on that sweet, peaceful vacation. See, in non-duality, they say it can't be both. There is no both. There is only the base state. The fundamental state. Everything else is a mirage, a projection. So it's not that the beach is beautiful or the vista on top of the mountain is beautiful that makes you peaceful. It's just that in those moments, everything else got taken away. And when everything else was taken away, you had nothing left but what you are. When you had nothing left but what you are, you knew. You had knowledge of what you are, and what you are is a beautiful thing, a peaceful thing. Because you didn't see any difference. So even in those beautiful times, top of the mountain, you have maybe just an instant of that, and then you say, oh, look at the bird. or the windy up here. Instantly, the mind creates a story or an observation to just experience. And it starts telling a story, and it may feel pretty good because it's just one little thing amongst a giant opening that you're feeling. But that still, that one little thing is like a drop of red in milk, drop of red dye. It turns it a little less white. Because the senses came out, grabbed hold of something, and put a thought in your mind. A thought of separateness. Any kind of separateness. Watching a bird fly by and say, "Look at that beautiful bird," is not actually just watching. You say to yourself, "Oh, look how beautiful that bird is." This is not as peaceful as just watching what is there. And so that's like the very beginning. Then you go back to your life, you come down off the mountain, and you're surrounded by all kinds of birds flying around. Your senses go out and they say, this, 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 this. They tell you such a big story, layered and layered on top of itself. The state of what is, which you maybe saw for a brief moment on top of the mountain, becomes completely covered up. This is the crux. This is the turning point. If this makes sense to you, that's a good sign. Then you have to test this theory until it's no longer a theory, until it's a knowledge, until you say, "Yes, I understand this. I know it to be true. I know it to be mine." Because sometimes you go on top of a beautiful mountain, you go back the next week, go up to the top, and you don't have that experience again. Mountain didn't change, did it? Didn't move. But you go up and you brought all your story with you. And so you don't see what's really there. You don't need to go to the mountain. What's really there is right here, right now. It's like that right now. It's like that all the time. But non-dual, we say it's like a mistake. Gets out of hand. The story maker runs rampant. Story makers are necessary, I think. It's part of our evolution, however you want to frame it. But it runs rampant to the point where it drives you crazy. Where you have forgotten who you are. This is what a crazy person is. Someone who, they forget themselves. They do not have control of their senses. They cannot be diligent because they run around like a squirrel, like an untrained dog. They see something and they go after it, for good or bad. So I think this is important because we also cannot have any expectations of people. Not everyone's going to be able to get this kind of control of their senses. This can be helpful for your own path. You can't expect it of anybody. Just look how hard it is for you. And you're trying. Look how hard it is for you to do this. It's so difficult. You try somebody who's got no interest in this. They stand no chance. They really believe that getting those things outside themselves is going to work. So you cannot be hard on them. It's only going to block you. It only adds to your story. Makes your story worse, more to weed through. So control of the senses, an ingredient for a person seeking this knowledge. And we really can't judge when we see people who aren't. Not necessarily because it makes us a bad person, it's not that kind of rule, but because it's just not useful for what you're trying to do. If you want to realize that this is all one thing, that it's okay, that you're safe, that the world and life and you are beautiful, the self is all of it, what use do you have judging someone else's lack of control? So their lack of control of their senses messes with your diligence. So now the answer isn't just stop it, because you can't. It's already taken hold. The practice is then to be with your judgment, whether it's the judgment of yourself, how you lost control of your senses, or the judgment of others losing their senses. You, what you really are, can watch the judgment. You are not the judgment. You are not the body, mind, who's doing the judging either. It's an error to believe this. Because if you believe that you're the body and the mind and the collection of thoughts and the personality who's doing the judging, then you will never ever understand that this is all one thing. By logic. By law. It just doesn't make any sense. How is that possible? So you must realize that you are not the body, you are not the mind, you are not the thoughts about the judgment, you are not the judgment itself. You are not the emotions, the anger, the frustration, or the sadness that comes with the judgment of yourself or others. Because these are all separate things, and they proliferate the idea of separateness. So when you look at yourself, whatever you believe that to be, you say, oh, well, that can't be me. Those judgments, those thoughts, this thing that is having to deal with the sense of judgment, the emotions and feelings that come with it, they can't be me. How could they? If they were me, well, then I couldn't observe them. So they're not me. Well, then what am I? That's the next question. This is what the diligence is about. Because as the pressure cooker gets turned up, as your life gets thicker and thicker, it becomes harder and harder to do the self-inquiry. This is why the diligence is an ingredient. Because you can, there's something that has to kind of trigger in the mind. Says, no, this is not how it's going to go down. I can't decide this for you. You can't decide this for you. It's either going to happen or it's not. You're going to continue to wake up in the difficult times. And you're going to say, this is crazy. I'm a crazy person. I don't know who I am. And so my senses run wild with me, trying to convince me I'm something I'm not. This has to happen in your day. It's easy, it happens in this room, it happens during this talk, because we're pointing at it. All we do is point at it. And if you like it, you like getting pointed at, you like having to look at yourself, then that's a good sign, because maybe you're going to keep looking at yourself. When you don't have reference points. You see, this text, my words, they help promote the idea, which will someday hopefully become knowledge. But you have to promote the idea. You have to be fed up with the false self. It's like, it's not worth it. It's not working. And this will build your diligence. It's like a reserve of power. It can't be taken away from you. Think about that. It can't be taken away from you because it's what you are. Everything else, everything you own or everything you have, could be taken away. Your body will someday even be taken away. Your thoughts, they get taken away. It's going to be taken away. Now, if you want to believe you're your body and you want to believe your thoughts, well, then you'd probably be pretty scared. And it's going to be very hard to believe that everything is one thing. So it's like, what is true? Not what is the bully. What bullies my fear of losing my body is a bully. My anxiety about having to take care of myself is a bully. It bullies you around. You know what I'm talking about? You feel it. It says, don't pay attention to yourself, pay attention to me, I'm a big bully. I'm standing in the middle of the hallway. You're over there in the corner. Listen to the bully. The bully says, you gotta go do this. Not because it's gonna make you less scared, just because I just said so. We know this, right? The things that we're afraid of doing what the bully says doesn't make us any less fearful of the bully. Instead, you have to transcend the bully. You know what, bully? You can't actually do anything. The fear? Fine. There can be fear. Fear can be here. Anxiety can be here. But it cannot do anything to me because I'm not my body. I'm not my thoughts. I'm not even the fear itself. So what can the fear do to you? It's just a bully waving his arms, her arms, his arms. Trying to get you to listen. Coerce you. That's why you need the diligence. The bully can't get me. And I will stick to this until I know for a fact that the bully can get me. I'm going to challenge the bully. I'm going to challenge the fear, challenge the anxiety. This is the classic story of a bully, right? You challenge the bully, and the bully leaves you alone because they're actually pretty scared themselves. That's how bullying works, right? They bully to not have to deal with their own fear. Sounds like you, right? Your craziness. So you challenge the fear, say, I'm not, like, you can't hurt me because I'm nothing but awareness. If that. So what can fear or anxiety do? And you diligently hold to this while fear has to do its song and dance, its parade, its carnival show, trying to allure you into believing in the world of separateness. And with time, with diligence, it just doesn't hold up. It doesn't hold up. Now, if you're still struggling with that, with whatever those little facets of your life are that are quite bullying you still, may make you lose your control of your senses, and they make it hard to be diligent with knowing that you're one thing, that this is all just one. Those areas of your life, the main teaching, the last ingredient, is to have faith. That's it. Faith. Because it's so hard to see in that moment that it's one. You feel the weight of separateness so powerfully. You cannot see that it's one. It is completely masked. You've never seen oneness in this scenario before. It's like you've been drowning. You have forgotten what a breath of fresh air even feels like. You've been drowning so long in the belief of separateness, it's weighed you down so heavy. In these moments, particularly, you don't even remember what oxygen feels like, what being yourself feels like. You need faith. Faith that you'll float to the surface if you just relax. If you challenge the bully, because the challenging the bully is relaxing. The bully wants you to feel tense. Wants you to feel narrow and different. Wants you to feel like you can't do this, or like there's no option. But the option is to relax so completely, it's like you're willing to actually drown. You're not willing to struggle in the process of drowning anymore. You're willing to actually drown, to take the water fully into your lungs. Instead, what happens is when you relax, you become buoyant, spiritually buoyant, and you float to the surface. You were holding yourself on the bottom anyway. It's like you're swimming into the ground, believing in separateness, trying to make it work. All you're doing is kicking up sand. You just relax. You have faith that it's real. How do I give you this faith? I can't. How did the Bhagavad Gita give you the faith? Can't. It's either an ingredient for you or it's not. You'll either believe that relaxing will work because you've got nothing else to lose and nothing else to try anymore. And you'll confront the fear of drowning, of letting go of your sense of self, your body, your mind, your thoughts. You'll confront it, and perhaps you'll float to the surface. Perhaps you'll just actually drown. You'll have the worst kind of chaos possible. This is why it's so scary. It's like confronting death. It is the death. It's the death of your false believing. It's the death of what you think you are. So they say a yani is dead before his body. Not a yani is a person with one who has attained the knowledge. Is not dead in the sort of morbid way that our culture likes to project upon death, but it's dead in the way that there's nobody to be hurt anymore. There's no one that needs protecting anymore. And the interesting part about anymore is that it only appears like there's like a time-bound relationship when you believe there was a person there in the first place. But on the other side of things, and this is what you maybe need some faith in, that looking at it from the other side of things, is that there was never a person there to begin with. There was never anyone to protect to begin with. You're just telling a lie, believing a lie. A pretend story of ignorance, of Maya, of illusion. What's really here is that you're all one. This is all one. And so all the stories that get made up in the idea of being different and separate and many is false. So what dies? And you can investigate with your diligence, what is going to die? Am I going to die? What am I? Could I be hurt? Could I suffer? Or am I just pretending to be drowning? It's not actually as bad as my story makes it out to be. It's like that moment when I was on the top of the mountain and I saw nothing. Nothing at all. And then a bird flew by and I started telling a story about that bird. And I came down from that mountain and I saw many, many more birds and I told many, many stories all on top of each other. And I forgot who I was. But I remember, deep down I remember what it was like to see nothing. Nothing but me, everywhere I looked. It was like being on the top of a mountain. This is the kind of faith that will make you find it. Diligence. Diligence to dig into yourself, to try to remember that you know this place already. It's already here. Diligence to say, I'm tired of what my senses try to distract me with. I have control over them. They're not so big after all. One who has faith and diligence, and who has control of the senses, attains knowledge. Having attained this knowledge, he or she soon reaches the state of absolute peace.